thought we'd just start and continue to eat, and we can maximize the time that we have together. I think it's great that you all know where to meet. I don't know, where did you meet last time? Huh? Charleston. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I guess you missed by just a couple days the Waterfire Festival, though, which is... Any of you familiar with the Waterfire Festival? It's one of my favorite city festivals in America, as they bring these two images that we in the church are really should be adept at communicating and conveying, but in many ways it takes the culture to understand the power of these images. And they put in through downtown Providence all these little, rivers, these little riverways, and in the middle of these canals and these rivers, they have these torches. And once a year, they have this what's called the Waterfire Festival, as the water literally comes alive. And these incredible, they go in and little boats light the bushels that contain the logs, and it's just a magical time. Waterfire Festival, I think, is what they call it. But you also know how to meet, because we have Starbucks in the building. Although, it's like a bomb shelter Starbucks. Have you noticed that? It's like, I was thinking, it's like it's cringing from Dunkin' Donuts. It's next door, and it's saying, don't really look too hard. We're not really here. But at any rate, we're going to talk today, and I'm just going to try and get my part done as quickly as possible so that we can engage in some conversation about, I think, the greatest challenge that you all have as communicators, as ministers of communication. And in doing this, by the way, I'm working with a VJ, and I want to suggest to you that the VJ will be one of the most important people in worship in the future, but in all of our lives in the future. You know what a DJ is? A DJ is what? This jockey. A VJ is a video jockey. Actually, I'm the first one that tried to do this. This was when they had the old dial-up. Anybody remember that? And it was the Kentucky Annual Conference, and I was preaching there, and when it was pastor school for their annual conference. And I tried to use a VJ at that time. This was a long time ago, back in the 90s. And it was so slow and clunky. But now, I call this person my dancing partner. And Don is my dancing partner. And you know what they said about Fred Astaire and Grace Kelly? Remember what they said about the two of them? Ginger Rogers. Thank you. So the real hard one, the real person that has the challenge today is Don, as what he's doing is just, as my dancing partner, just going where I'm going online, drawing up images on the web. This is not PowerPoint, okay? PowerPoint, I call it, is a Gutenberg person's use of the new media. This is how a Gutenberg person would use a media in a Google world. So what we're going to do is we're going to just have fun. Don's just going to have fun. And if I get boring, you don't be surprised if you see a picture of somebody snoring or something. But that's happened before with VJs. But this is, I appreciate, Don, you doing this. This is our conversation today, is what's a Gutenberg groupie to do in a Google world? And I'm using this language purposely because every time I increasingly use the language of modern and postmodern, or use the language of, and I've done that for a long time, or use the language of emerging church, hackles start to rise. People start to get very defensive. There's a lot of baggage. Those words, those labels carry a lot of cargo. So I find that just to use a neutral language that doesn't convey all sorts of connotations and is more user-friendly, to talk about this transition that we're in, And that is that I am a person who was born B.C., before computers. All of my kids were born A.C., after computers. I am a product of a Gutenberg world. And I've been trained to think, do ministry, do church in the interface that works primarily with a Gutenberg culture and a Gutenberg world. And that's where I feel comfortable. The challenge is that we are now living, whether we like it or not, we're now living in a Google world. And as of September, Google is 10 years old, but it's more of a metaphor because really I date it to 1973. I just say if you're born before 1973, you're an immigrant. If you're born after 1973, you're a native. And the reason why I choose 1973 as kind of my date is because of somebody by the name of Martin Cooper. Now, have you ever heard of Martin Cooper? You all will. And your kids will know him because they will know him as well as they know Alexander Graham Bell. Because in 1973, Martin Cooper made the first cell phone call. Who he called, I don't know, but Martin Cooper invented the cell phone. Now, when I started talking about this digital electronic culture and the church's need to claim it, a lot of theological schools and a lot of people out there started saying, Sweets, he's just talking about white, Western, upper-class culture. Yeah, you remember those first cell phones? Yeah. They came in a body bag, you know. I tell my kids that the first one I had, I wasn't at the bleeding edge of this technology. I was much later. I didn't get a cell phone until the mid-'80s, but it cost $940. Can I get a witness? Anybody remember those days? Yeah, thank you, Don. Yeah. In fact, I remember that one that you had, actually. And when you went to lunch, you had to make a reservation for your cell phone because you couldn't, you know, you just couldn't take it and put it on the table. You had to have a special seat for it. It's too big for a carry-on, exactly. Yeah. In fact, my kids, I've had to actually rent movies where they use these in the movies so that they would believe that this was actually, people actually use this and use this cell phone. But I was roundly criticized because, you know, this is just a phenomenon of Western culture, just a phenomenon. It's so elitist and we don't need to worry about this. Well, in 35 years, since 1973, we have 6.6 billion people on the planet, 3.3 billion of whom have cell phones. That does not include those that have SIM cards. If you go to the squatter camps in Johannesburg, South Africa, if you go to the favelas in Rio de Janeiro, these are the poorest places on the planet. People can't afford a cell phone, but they can have a SIM card. So they have people actually who make a living renting the cell phone so they can, for a couple of minutes, so that you can put your insert your SIM card and make a call. This is the fastest diffusion of any technology in the history of planet Earth. This whole diffusion of this cell phone technology. We have no idea here in the States how far behind we are. We are starting to see how much in trouble as the nerve center of the entire American empire called Wall Street has come crashing down. But 75% of all Korean households have high-speed internet access. The equivalent figure in the U.S. is 40%. This is, and I admit this, but with some embarrassment, but this is a dinosaur. Right here is a dinosaur. I call this my brain, the better part of my brain. Part of my brain now is outside my body. I go nowhere except with this. But this is a dinosaur. You know, why? Who says a computer has to look like a typewriter? Well, you know what? My generation, what I grew up with as a good Gutenberg person, I grew up with a typewriter. So we have to make the new technology like we feel comfortable using it. Now, my kids have no investment in a computer looking like a typewriter. So they have a very different interest, and their computers look much more like this. Cell phones now are PCs. In the world I grew up in, this Gutenberg world, to say somebody was all thumbs, it was an insult. Today, to say somebody's all thumbs is good. And I was in Korea last year, and they introduced a new computer. And I sat there in absolute wonderment as the computer looked like this. Had a little dome on the top. You clicked it, and it projected a screen. And you rotated it to get the right focus. Had another little dome here. You clicked it. They were very apologetic about this dome, but you clicked this one and projected a keyboard. See, they've got voice recognition about 99.9% accurate, but it has to be 99.9999 because just one missing knot, you know, changes everything. But we have no idea how far this country is, U.S. America is behind in this Google world that is coming. In fact, you will find in Emotiv, E-M-O-T-I-V, I think if you look at emotiv.com, I think that's where it is, but this is debuting this Christmas. And it's a headset. It's a headset that you can play video games as it reads your brainwaves and you play it with your thoughts. This is how fast things have moved. Emotiv. It's $299 for the headset. The challenge is that you and I have been trained to do Gutenberg ministry and Gutenberg thinking and Gutenberg communications. We've got to help our churches and we've got to train ourselves to function in a Google world. In a Gutenberg world, the primary delivery system is print. The delivery system for learning and faith development was the book and print. In a Google world, the primary delivery system for learning and faith development is the internet. Now, this does not mean that people are less committed. There it is. That's the headset. Are less committed to print. My kids are reading as much as I ever did. Media is not a zero-sum game. You all know this. Let me just bring a little Coles to Newcastle. The more we get into a digital electronic Google world, the more important and in some ways valuable books become. What's the best, one of the best investments you can make in a virtual vicarious digital world? Paper. How's your paperless office doing? The more we go virtual, the more we drown in paper. My kids are the ones that created the biggest publishing phenomenon in children's books history. And these are not golden books. Remember those? These are not Goodnight Mr. Moonsize books. These are brick books. These are doorstop books. These are weightlifting books. And they continue to come. I mean, who would ever think? What's her name? Myers. Stephanie. Myers and the whole Twilight series is just following up with these huge monster books that these kids cannot get. My 13-year-old daughter, what did she want for Christmas? I mean, for her birthday? Books. What does she want for Christmas? Books. But she also wants video games, but it's both and. But the magic is no longer the printed page. The magic is the screen. I don't know how long this is going to last. I do think it won't last any more than 2030 as we learn this Google interface. But a lot's going to happen in the next 25, 20 years. So the challenge then for us is, what does it mean to communicate in this Google culture, in this Google world? And to to understand that we now have people that we need to teach us. I am an immigrant to this Google world. I admit it. I confess it. And as with all immigrants, who are the people we learn the most from about the cues and the clues as to what's going on out there? The natives. You used to have children to work the fields. Now you have children to work the electronics. And it's time that we began sitting at the feet of our children and letting them teach us. What does it mean to do ministry in and to communicate in this Google culture? Now, we got a double whammy here because most of our churches are stuck in a Gutenberg mindset. They're stuck in Gutenberg customs. They're stuck in Gutenberg. But you and I are this is part of the missing function in the whole leadership literature, which I'm not big on to begin with. But I don't know how many of you saw last night's football game. It was very painful for a Giants fan to watch. But all you Cleveland people are real excited. But one of the real problems that Peyton Manning had last night is the key to moving. I mean, Eli Manning, thank you. One of the real problems that Eli had last night was moving the team downfield because he did not give his receivers a sufficient, what's the word? Lead. When you're in the huddle, you reach out to where people are. When you're moving downfield, you reach out to where people are not. That's called the lead. The only way you hit a moving target is what? Get ahead of it. You lead them. And it's time that we began leading our churches into this future, giving them the necessary lead, prophesying where they need to go, not just reaching out to where they are, because then we're not going to go anywhere. We're just stuck in a huddle, and we're stuck fumbling the ball, losing, and playing catch up or put down. So the shift from a Gutenberg world to a Google world. Let me just stop there. Comments, questions before I go any further. Yeah, Dan.
If we take the example of the United Methodist Book of Discipline and back it up 100 years, though, we have this small, little, tiny, narrow book.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, part of this is more than just Gutenberg. It's a proliferation of, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's. And now the discipline has become so restrictive to us, it's hard to break out.
Yeah.
And I hear the younger bishops in their conversations, you know, do we need to use the discipline anymore?
Yeah. I think it's a matter of how you read the discipline, too, and how you choose to read it. You know, I choose to read it in a way that there's perfect, total freedom to do whatever you want to do and need to do. And I can pick those and find those passages real quick. So I think it's a matter of whether you are a fundamentalist reader of the discipline or a little more progressive reader of the, or more of a libertarian reader of the discipline. I mean, we can all put ourselves on a scale there. But I think in its best construction, the discipline gives us all the freedom that we need if we choose to read it in a helpful, creative, innovative way. So I don't think the discipline is a hamstring to the Holy Spirit. I do think, though, one of the biggest hamstrings of the Holy Spirit and handicaps is our lack of imagination. And since you mentioned to go back in time, let me just say Wesley was a pioneer in the whole use of media for communications. I mean, he had the second highest earned income of anybody in the 18th century. He was the Rick Warren of his day. Why? Because he was a master at taking this print culture, this Gutenberg world, and pushing it into mass media. Right? 18 centuries went up until then. Books are really rare. I mean, they're chain books because there's so few of them. You only got four chain books. People stand in line for hours to read one of these. So they had the Bible, Fox's Book of Martyrs in the back of churches. You all know what I'm talking about. And then the technology develops to the point where we can begin to start making these resources and disseminating to the people. I mean, hence you see, look at that. Writing is a technology. See, we tend to forget this. A pen and paper is a technology. What went in everybody's saddlebag if you were an itinerant? Technology. The Methodists pioneered the use of and the distribution of, well, let's talk about something, field preaching, street preaching. When they went did their street preaching and stood on the street corners and preached, they had crowds of hundreds. Well, what were they passing out while they did street preaching? Tracts, pamphlets, sometimes books. Now, this is called the discipline of historical context now. In the 1790s, a book was the equivalent of 1 month's salary. So if we were doing today what our ancestors did back then, see, a couple hundred years have passed, and we're still passing out tracts, pamphlets, books. If we were doing what our ancestors did, we'd be, now I'm not arguing that we should do this, but if we just were doing a historical extrapolation and say, okay, we're going to do for our day what our ancestors did for their day, we'd be passing out Palm Pilots, iPhones, personal computers. You want to get a crowd? Yeah, okay. But we'd have the right software in it, see? We'd be passing out the hardware with the right software in it. So I think this historical perspective is really key, but let's really put it in the discipline of historical context. We're still doing what our ancestors did when they really were pioneers in the cutting-edge communication of the day. Wesley, remember what he said when somebody says, I don't want to read? I just don't like to read. I don't want to read. That means I don't want to master the dominant media forms of the day. Why is it that they become a Baptist? You know, do something, go someplace else. Part of Wesley's fortune was invested in buying books for his preachers, buying this new technology for those who couldn't afford it. And if you don't want to master this new technology, then become something else. Don't be a Methodist, because this is what we're known for. We've lost this passion. We've lost this passion to communicate and to master as best we can and to use this dominant media form that we have. So, just do for our day what our ancestors did for their day. Yeah?
I was going to say, part of the problems are, you mentioned earlier, that technology is moving so quickly that as soon as we adopt something, it becomes obsolete. How do you, whether that's social networking, whether that's email newsletters, whether that's, it's moving so fast that once we, communicator, adopt something and then try to introduce it to those that we communicate with, maybe there's something else better that comes along. How do you handle the velocity of changes that?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a really great question, but it is partly a realization that, but you have to get in somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get in somewhere. I mean, let me give you one example. I did not get on MySpace or Facebook. Now, I guess there's some sites up there, but I didn't do them. They're called ghost sites. I have nothing to do with them, so I have no idea. I've never even looked at them. So don't go there because I don't want to look at them. But but it just didn't seem right to me. Okay, it's all about me. I'm going to position me, and okay, people talking about me, and you know all this stuff. And then, about 2 months ago, and I'm slow, I discovered Twitter. Okay. So I decided, okay, I'm going to jump on Twitter. Now, I've been on for less than 2 months, maybe 6 weeks. Go to Twitter.com. I figure the fact that I discovered, now Twitter's only been here for 14 months. It's only been on, it's relatively new. But just go to use my name, Len Sweet. It's one word, Len Sweet. And I can trust you all, right? Shalom, S-H-A-L-O-M. And I think that's it. You change that. And there we are. Now, I figure that I have now, by the way, the background there is something I downloaded from a monastery that's in Second Life and has put its entire library in Second Life. How many of you know what Second Life is? I teach courses in Second Life, doctoral level courses. I figure that because I've discovered Second Life, guess what? I mean, I've discovered Twitter. My kids are onto something else. The fact that I've discovered it, it's old. All right? Now, I don't know what they're on, but I just begin with that premise. I've discovered Twitter. Okay. They're on something else. And I'm an old fuddy-duddy. But you got to get on somewhere. Now, look, I've been on for 6 weeks, and I'm following 265 people. But I got over 700 that are tracking my little 140, I call them sound bites that bite. And let's go up there to search, because where's the Texas Annual Conference? Who's here from the Texas Annual Conference? Okay, you're the only one on Twitter as a conference. Just go to, huh? You just got on 2 weeks ago. I hate to admit this, and this is a total embarrassment, okay? The Presbyterians were on before us. The Presbyterian Communications Commission. I mean, they are, let me tell you, here's the problem with the Presbyterians. I have a brother who's a Presbyterian minister, and I just say, John, how's it feel to be a leader in the second fastest dying church in the U.S.? See, whoever masters a media form at its highest levels of literacy will have the greatest trouble making a transition to a new media form. And nobody mastered print culture and Gutenberg culture at higher levels of sophistication and literacy than the Presbyterians. So they are clinging to this Gutenberg culture for dear life. The average age of a Presbyterian now is in its low 70s. And they beat us on Twitter. Just go up to search where it says find people. See where it says find people way up there, yeah. Yeah, no, that's all right. And then it'll say, there'll be something that says search. See, right to the right? And then just do United Methodist. And you got about 20 people. And you go down far enough and you find, there it is, the Texas Conference of the United Methodist Church. Again, I'm not saying you all need to get on Twitter. Again, find out what our kids are using now and skip Twitter, leapfrog Twitter if you want. But you got to get on somewhere. You got to get on somewhere. And you just can't say, okay, I'm going to wait till everything slows down, because it's not going to. It's just going to get faster. Change has changed. Change is no longer incremental. Change is exponential. And comments, questions?
Exponentially. So I guess my question is, do you think there will be a point, kind of a leveling off point for a time where technology will kind of level off and then take another rocket ship?
It may, but they're already talking about yottabytes, Y-O-T-T-A. Yeah, just Google yottabytes, B-Y-T-E-S. This is one septillion. They're talking about with a yottabyte, you can video your entire life and digitize it. In other words, every moment of your life, every moment of your life you can record on your computer. Huh? Like a Truman Show? I don't know why you'd want to do that, but I mean, this is how fast things are happening. Yeah. And here's the challenge that you and I have. I mean, is the unit information, and they're already telling you, septillion bytes. That's 10 to the 24th power. I mean, this is like they're talking about money now, but I haven't heard that word yet. I've heard trillion, but I haven't heard septillion. But I'm afraid to do it. But I do think, here's how fast this is happening. Now, what I'm using are this dinosaur. All right, we talk about the screen. And we just have to realize that I call them a googly. All right, that's my word for them. But a googly, it's not real until it's on a screen. Okay? This is their language. Just as for us, the language is not real until it's on a print. I mean, that's when it has authority, is when it shows up in print. It does not have authority on a print for these googlies. It doesn't only has authority when it shows up on a screen. That's when it has authority. It's very hard for us to understand this. It's very hard for pastors to understand this. You know, I just say the pastor's office ought to be a studio. No pastor ought to have an office. They ought to have a studio. Constantly find ways of getting your image and your face out there. And again, in Korea, they've integrated cell phones into the ministry. So everybody they've got huge churches, as you know, and everybody gets personal messages on their birthday from the pastor, and it's just this total use of this. But this technology here, the screen, is going to disappear. And that's why I say 2030. I think 2030 in many ways is kind of an omega point. And that's when, so we're going to be stuck in this using screens till about 2030. Now, you say, well, that's a long ways away. Wait a minute. You got children under 10, Lord willing, Lord tarrying, these are 22nd century children. Their lifespan is going to take them well into the 22nd century. Your churches are norming and forming faith in children whose lifespan is the average age of a male in the 1890s, let's just do males, was 37. The average age of a male in 1990 was 74. It's already now gone up to 77. Fast-growing segment of the American population are centenarians. A female born after the 21st century began has a greater than 60% chance of living well into the 22nd century. How you doing, norming and forming faith? How we doing? So when I say 2030, I'm saying just around the corner. These screens are going to disappear. Everything on the screen is going to become what? You're already using it every time you check out of a supermarket. It's going to become holographic. So if I'm here in 2030, we're now meeting. United Methodist Association of Communications, or Communicators, are meeting in 2030, and we're here in Providence, and I got Jerry sitting here. Here's my biggest challenge, my biggest issue. Is it really Jerry? Because Jerry could have decided after his plane got delayed in Washington, he had to stand on an aisle for hours while they fixed it under his seat. I'm not sure I would have sat back in that seat. But he said, forget this, I'm going home. And I'm sending my avatar. And if you know what an avatar is, ask your five-year-old. And I'm not going to know this is really Jerry or his avatar, which will be so real, until I what? Touch him. This is why the major interface in the future is going to be a touch interface. John Nesbitt got this right a long time ago. High tech, high touch. Right now, it's visual. Right now, it's very screen-based, but we're coming to a major interface in the future when it's all going to be about touch. That's how fast things are happening. And you try, let me just say, in a world where for about the price of a cheap organ, you could create an environment when you're preaching on the Emmaus Road, you don't have to talk about it. You can actually take your people down in Emmaus Road, try and do the three-point sermons and the points and principles in that kind of a world. See, a Gutenberg world began with a 95-point sermon. And you notice it's been getting a little less pointy. I mean, John Wesley got down to, what, 22 points, and Charles G. Finney got down to 12, and Dwight L. Moody got down to 9, Billy Sunday got down to 7, Billy Graham got down to 3. Hayden Robinson says, make it just one big point. I say, making points no longer makes points. My wife says, sweet, your sermons are pointless. And I say, thank you. Because the point of a point's a circle, anyways. Yeah. Anyone else? Let me just one more, and then I'll move. Yeah.
These projections are still, you're talking first world, second world. Where is the third world? I mean, the third world, death is still early in life. We're talking about, you know, all of this technology. That's first world, second world.
No. Now, see, this is exactly, this is what I wanted to forestall right here. Okay, but I'm hearing the same thing again. No. Hear me. My brother, he's chair of the language department, University of Virginia. Okay, we got to get some stuff here. We've been taught a bill of goods. My brother, University of Virginia, professor, chair of the language department. His son is in the Peace Corps in Senegal. His son lives in a hut in the middle of a village. His son has a higher internet speed than his father does at the University of Virginia.
That I don't deny. I mean, cell phones are the way of Africa right now, communication.
I get better cell phone service in the Kalahari Desert than I do in New Jersey.
But
I'm never dropped in China. I spent 2 weeks in China. I wasn't dropped once. I'm dropped 5 times going from Newark to Drew. No, yeah, I hadn't thought of that either. That's probably why they're dropping me. No. I mean, where do you want to... Let me tell you. You can either spend $400,000 on a surgery in the U.S., or you can go to India for $30,000 and get even better care. It's called medical tourism. It's the number one. We have got some major rethinking to do about where we are positioned in the world. We aren't on the top 10 of anything, Dan. Let's talk about infant mortality. Where are we? You know. Now, you do have, but we've gone from people who've never made a phone call in their lifetime to leapfrog to cell phones and better cell phones than we have. That's exactly, and you want an image of where we are and where we're stuck in our churches and where we're stuck in our thinking, telephone poles. Okay? Telephone poles. I mean, we're still putting them in. You go to any place around the world, they don't put in. I mean, you go to Rio de Janeiro, it's beautiful. You don't see a telephone pole anywhere along the beach or anywhere because they just leapfrog from nothing to total wireless. So they're not pumping in. They don't have the industrial mindset here. They don't have the industrial. They're just gone totally to wireless. We are stuck with these. We're still putting in. I mean, Clarksburg, West Virginia, and is a. Anybody here from West Virginia? That's kind of my. Okay, thank you. Did you? Okay, Clarksburg. I mean, here's Clarksburg. Here, and this is so much our churches. They decided we're going to make our town cute. So we're going to put in these cute little new kinds of streetlights. They're vintage streetlights, and we're going to put in new sidewalks. So here's what they do. They totally rip up the sidewalks. They rip up and put in all new piping so they can put in these streetlights. And they keep in the telephone poles. So they just add more clutter. You see what I mean? Visually, it's just become more cluttered. when you got the whole thing opened up and the whole thing dug out, all you got to do is drop the wires. Besides, there's a lot of storms called snowstorms in Clarksburg that would save you a lot of money. But we still have this mentality. We're still preserving the wires and the poles. Now, okay. Come back at me.
But in Africa, mortality rates, malaria, you know, the basic things that have been conquered in first world, second world countries are still, we're struggling with. The economy, Zimbabwe. You know, when do we assist the peoples of all the world to come not only technologically, but also in a human, caring, compassionate way?
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly with you. But hear me, those people in those squatter camps in Johannesburg, South Africa, a squatter camp in South Africa, anybody been to a squatter camp? You know what I'm talking about? Okay, 80, 90% of people there have what? Yeah, but they also have something else. AIDS. The government will not do anything for those squatter camps because they look at dormitories for the dying. You know, these are just, why should we invest any money here? So, but even those people there who are, this is the poorest place on the planet, they got cell phones. They got cell phones. So the projection is by 2011, you're going to have about three quarters of the human population on cell phones. That means three quarters of the human population will be connected. And we're not talking about just a phone connection here. We're talking about these cell phones are now PCs. These are internet delivery systems. So the potential, all I'm saying is, And I agree with you hard that we got to start dealing with some of these issues, some of these problems, and some of the medical issues where life expectancy isn't. But the notion that we're ahead here is not true. Plus the notion that that we can't, that because some of these people, you know, it's amazing to me when I went here how many satellite dishes I saw. And if we go to the favelas, you see the satellite. They don't have running water yet. But they got... It's like, I'm from West Virginia, too. You know, what's our state dish? Anybody here from Mississippi? Mississippi thanks God for West Virginia. Okay? Or else you'd be number 50 in everything. But what's the state flower of West Virginia? The satellite dish. Yeah. These are my relatives. You got a little shack falling into the creek. Can I say that right? All right. It's Willow Creek. But it's got the biggest satellite dish because that was the earliest technology. Yeah. This technology, more U.S. homes have TVs. Yeah. More U.S. homes have TVs than have indoor plumbing. I mean, that's just... This is no excuse for us not to use this technology for the glory of God. Yeah. Comments?
Go to speedmatters.org.
Speedmatters.org. Okay. Now, what are we going to see there? Tell us about it. Really?
And it shows how slow. Thanks. Speedmatters.org is a website that's promoting internet access for the U.S. that's much, much faster. And it's a nonprofit. And what it is that they're doing is you can log in, you can look at your own internet speed, and then compare that. It's right there. Compare that to other places in the world, and what you'll find is that we are really slow.
We are really slow. Exactly.
It's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing. It is embarrassing. And I call it, we're sucking out a lot of balloon juice here, our own balloon juice, about how good we are and how far advanced we are, and we become, yeah.
How many of those other countries are having government provide high-speed internet access compared to us?
A lot. Yeah, a lot. And that's one of the, but here is where, here's how I look at it, and how I think about it. The internet, I mean, it really bothers me that at this hotel you got to pay extra for an internet. This is highway robbery. Okay, the internet now is a utility. You don't go to a place and say, how much extra is the water? How much extra is the electricity? You should not have to go and say, how much extra is the...
U.S. Airways does. How much extra is your baggage carry-on?
Yeah. But increasingly, in other parts of the world, this is not... It is a utility. And it will be utility. And it will be utility in all churches. Part of the campaign ought to be every United Methodist Church ought to have full, ought to be a hotspot for your community. Why isn't every United Methodist Church a hotspot for the community? Why is it not a place for that says this is part of its evangelism? Huh?
A
YMAX
spot to cover the whole city.
Or to cover the whole city. Really, be in mission. Absolutely. We're going to cover, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, look at that. Yeah, you see how high up South Korea is and Japan. I didn't know Japan was even higher. Thank you for that. Man, that is great. Yeah. Poor old West Virginia. Yeah.
How do we get so behind?
Well, partly, again, it's the same problem as the Presbyterians, okay? We really invested in an industrial age technology and industrial age thinking in wires, poles, in that whole mentality. And so we have, that's one of the reasons why we've gotten so behind, is that we're just, that is our thinking. Yeah, but that goes with Dan's point about the discipline. You know, we have a, you know, most of the stuff like American Idol. We did not invent that. It was 10 years. We copied somebody else. Now we provided kind of the killer app version of it, which is usually what happens. That after about 10 or 20 years being out there, then we'll kind of come in and do the killer app version.
In Indiana, we are closing automobile plants left and right. GM, Ford, Chrysler, they're closing. They're big dinosaurs. And as fast as they're closing, we're opening up Honda, Toyota, Subaru. And it's not that we're losing the industry. It's we're losing the idea of how do you make a car.
Yeah. And one of the biggest problems, and I didn't want to spend a lot of time on this, but we can, but let me just mention to you that one of the biggest problems we have is one of the biggest problems in our church is in a Gutenberg world, I call it our tribe, okay? In a Gutenberg world, the bell curve extends to culture, not just to nature. What I mean by that? You know what a bell curve is? It's called a normal distribution curve. And it means that in a normal distribution, things will bunch up in the middle, and everything will create big, huge middles, and you'll have very small extremes. Things bunch up. And in the modern world, in the Gutenberg world, that's exactly what happened. The Gutenberg world created, it massified everything, and that's what Wesley was a master at. Mass communications, mass media, mass technology, mass thinking. That's why we have all these general companies. General Electric, General. See, General Motors is going under because it still thinks there's such a thing as a General Motor. I'll come back to that. Give me some more generals. General Dynamics, General Mills, General. General. I did not say that. But even we have a church that wants to think general. We do. Now, in that kind of a world, where's the place you position yourself for power and impact? In the center, in the middle, to be most general. So we got a whole thinking that has bought into this. Y'all with me? General. But let me tell you, this is the world that created middle class, middle management, mainframe computers, mainline religion. How are all those doing? In a Google world, here's what's happening. There's this huge mitosis of the middle. Middles are dropping out. Now, this is not my phrase. Daniel Pink. Would you just Google him? Daniel Pink has, or just his phrase. He says, nope, here's where the normal distribution curve is now. And sociologists now are teaching a new normal distribution curve. So if you go to college now, they don't teach you a cultural bell curve. They teach you a well curve. The new. It's not there. It's a Wired magazine article. I think you just Google well curve. He wrote this Wired magazine article back in 2002 or something like that. Middles are dropping out, and the ends are getting huge. So we're living in a world where, where's the worst place you can be and position yourself when middles are flopping out and ends are getting huge? The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. Are the two precise groups the church is least prepared to minister with? I mean, television screens are getting bigger and television screens are getting smaller. Yeah, nobody wants a middle, a general. You know, in fact, even the word general has a negative, yeah, a negative thing. The bell curve, that beautiful form of regular. That's the article right there. Great. You are so fast, Don. Man alive. You got a slow internet. You may be one of the, even with a slow internet, this is one of the best VJs I've ever had. Man, I'll tell you, it's incredible. So we've got to start thinking both and. A world where opposite things are happening at the same time. Churches are getting bigger and churches are getting smaller. Everything is moving, so to the both and. Yeah.
I wonder how many people in this room subscribe to Wired.
Yeah, it's, I read it online. You read it online? Yeah, there's a Google for you. Yeah.
How many online I subscribe?
Can you get it on what's the Amazon? Kindle? Can you get Wired on Kindle? I don't know.
I think so, but I don't know.
Okay. I don't know. My kids got me Kindle for Christmas. How many of you know what I'm talking about? I had to wait 2 months to get it. And I still not have received it yet because they keep passing it around to one another. And so it was my present, but I have yet to hold my Kindle because my kids they won't let it out of their grubby little paws.
Yeah, the bishop on Kindle?
So I don't know whether I like it or not because I haven't used it. And the reason why I got it is I'm allergic to, I love to read the Times, and but I'm allergic to all that print. And just as ecologically, I think it's terrible what we're doing to these trees every day with all these papers and what we could maybe do with this. So I thought I'd give it a try, but again, they even got me the Wall Street Journal and New York Times subscriptions, but I haven't used it yet. Okay, yeah. Kindle on Kindle. That's good. All right, let's go to that TED.com thing. And I want to challenge you with, I'm going to tell you the story of this, and if you get this, you're a Google. If you don't get this, like me, you're a Gutenberg. And we need help understanding what's going on. I have three videos that I'm kind of addicted to. One is TED, the TED videos. Some of you familiar with TED videos? Okay, some of you. I think it's technology, entertainment, or education design or something. I don't know what it stands for. This is one of them. The other one is called Pop Tech, P-O-P exclamation mark tech, T-E-C-H. This is actually the one that I spoke at. So let me give you a little story about this. I was the first religion speaker at Pop Tech. It means pop culture and technology. And what they do is once a year they have people, yeah, that's the TED. Once a year they have, you go to Pop Tech, yeah. And then we'll look at this a little later. I wanted you to see a few minutes of that. But once a year at Pop Tech, they have, and they do it in the fall, at Camden, Maine. Anybody from New England? What a great place to be in the fall. Leaf peeper season, they know when to have it. And at Camden, Maine, they use the community theater It's about 500 seats. And they have people come, and they invite people. You can only talk for 18 minutes. And you just give kind of what's the cutting edge of what you're thinking about for those 18 minutes. And there it is. Oh, they call them podcasts. That's new. And they're from all different walks of life. I mean, it's really, but these are people that are really in depth. So it's very Renaissance. It's very Renaissance in their orientation. You have musicians, you'll have writers, you'll have all sorts of interesting people, and just what is the cutting edge of what they're in. There's Daniel Pink. He's in. He went, and I wonder what he talked about. But at any rate, when I went, I brought my son with me, but I had to pay $1,000 for his ticket. Now, I didn't have to pay. They don't pay you anything to do this, but it's, but there's the community theater, and but I had to pay $1,000 for him. And but that only that doesn't give you the hotel room. That doesn't give you anything. I just your right to be one of those 500 and sit in that seat. You with me? And now that, this was many years ago, maybe 7-8 years ago. Today the tickets are 5,000. See, so my son and I stopped doing this somewhere between the 1,000 and 5,000. Because you know you'd think he'd be able to pay his own way now, but you know once a father, I guess always a father, but. But here's what, see if you get this. You got people willing to pay $5,000 to be one of those 500 people, knowing that everything that goes on that stage, those 18 minutes, will be downloaded and put on the web for free. Okay, now, do you hear that? So, you go there. In fact, the last year my son and I were there, we actually got talking about something. So we sat in the hotel room, watched the thing on the screen as we talked and ate. Now, why are people willing to spend $5,000 plus hotel plus airfare per person to go to an event knowing that every bit of that content will be free? High tech, high touch. It's all about the experience. It's all about the relationship. It's all about I was there. It's all about I was there. I met with these people. I mean, you do have times where they have cocktail hour. They have book signings. You can tell your own personal story. People are not paying. It's a new kind of content. Aren't you? The new kind of content is the experience and the relationship. That's the same with cell phones. Cell phones have gone from $940, at least in my life, to what? Zero. Unless you get an iPhone or one of those fancy ones. But they're not selling cell phones now. What are they selling? A relationship. And if you don't think you're in a relationship, try and get out of it. You're in a long-term relationship. Relationships that are lasting longer than some marriages. These long-term relationships. In this Google world, the primary currency is the new. There's a new content. It's hard for our people to get this. It's really hard. Let me try at it one more time, and then we're going to go to that. Go back to there's another one. The New Yorker has some wonderful podcasts as well. But these are my two favorite: Pop Tech and TED. Let me try again. I used to put my calendar online, and I had to stop doing it because I almost had to have one person just full-time dealing with the kind of stuff that it generated. But here's one of the things that it generated. Okay, I'm going to be in Providence, Rhode Island. What's the date of today? 14th of October. Meeting with, you know, let's say it's the Assemblies of God, all right, speaking at their convention. So I'll start getting emails. Dr. Sweet doesn't know who I am, but I'd love to have breakfast with him anyway. I can have breakfast before he speaks that morning. So I want to encourage, you know, emerging new kinds of leaders. So I'll go, okay, you know, there's like 3 or 4 months out, so it's easy to say yes then, you know. So sure, yeah, I'll have breakfast. At 7 o'clock, let's just meet at the hotel. And so I'll, then it, now it's this morning, you know, and it's 7 o'clock. It's quarter, well, it's actually 5 o'clock, and I'm going, who got me into this? Who said yes to this? Why did I agree to this? So I stumble down. I don't know who the person is, but the person says, Dr. Sweet, I'm here. Thanks for having breakfast with me. That's great. You know, I just need some coffee. Get me to the coffee quick. And they go, hope you don't mind. I invited a few of my friends. Okay, that's all right. Oh, by the way, we got a room, so we can have breakfast kind of in quiet, you know. Okay. So then I go and go into this room, and there's 20 people seated at a table, many times already starting to have breakfast. And for the next couple of hours, I have the time of my life. We're talking, we're engaging, we're having conversations, they're asking me questions. By the way, they're asking me interesting questions. They want to know my secrets. How do you do this? Why? Where did you get that from? How do you get all, you know? So I'm really having a great time. Finally, it's getting close to when I've got to be with those Assemblies of God people. And I just go, okay, well, we got to bring this thing to a halt. And this has been great. I really had a great time. I don't know where it is. I'll just follow you. No, we're not going. What do you mean you're not going? No, I'm on it, you know. I'm on this morning. Okay, do you need prayer? Would you like us to pray with you? Is there nobody here going? No. We just came to be with you. Yeah, but I'm on at 10 o'clock. Well, do you want us to pray for you? And the first couple times this happened, I felt dissed, you know? But then I realized this is the future. This is the future. See, with these googlies, there's a whole new content. The content is not the performance on the stage, the sage on the stage. They figure they can get that in books and everything else. It's not content for them unless they can touch it and shape it and make it their own. That's the new content forming right in front of my face. A whole new understanding of what the content is. Let me give you an image for this. Some of you are familiar with, I initially talked about this interface. I don't call it a Google interface. I talk about a postmodern interface right after Amazon and eBay came out, and called the book Postmodern Pilgrims. And then people didn't get it, so I tried one more time, and this is it. I'm not going to deal with it anymore, but it's a book called The Gospel According to Starbucks. It could have been about Cold Stone Creamery. It could have been about IKEA. Could have been about NASCAR. Could have been about Dole Bananas. Anything that is working is using an interface that connects with the Google world. And my acronym is EPIC, E-P-I-C. Experiential, Participatory, Image-Rich, Connective. This is not the interface that we're used to. We're used to a Gutenberg interface that is rational, logical, linear, just like you read a page, consecutive, sequential. We're used to an interface that is highly performance-based, not participatory. We're used to understanding that the power's in the words. Every one of us here is a wordsmith. We have somebody in our tribe, one of my former students, that talks about image smith. We've got to learn to be image smiths. I'm going to say more about that this afternoon. And third one, very individualistic. This is a highly individualistic culture. The Gutenberg culture is anti. The most antisocial technology ever invented was the book. That's what created a modern. See, the modern is all about the I. That's all about the privatistic, individualistic, narcissistic. If you lived in the 13th century, you get to choose who you wanted to marry. You get to choose where you wanted to live. You get to choose what you want to do for a living. See, you were totally defined by your tribe, by your community. Print technology ushered it into this world. That's why Luther's words, "Here I stand," and the power that I is still with us. That got bigger, 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 bigger. The power of the perpendicular until today. It's so with us that even the technologies of Google reflect that. iTunes, iToys, iPods, iPhones. We can't even do a we without two eyes. Let me finish this. This new interface, and one of the hardest that we got to deal with, is this P one, an epic, participatory. And here's my image. I guarantee you remember the image, because that's what we do. We all remember images. When I was growing up, went to concerts, paid big bucks for a concert, got there early, you get the best seat. That was my seat. Don't take that seat. The concert was all about the right seat and watching a performance. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Today, you still pay big bucks for a ticket, but the bucks have nothing to do with the seat. You get there as early as you possibly can, because why? You want to be where? As close to the front as you can get. What do they call the front? Mosh pit. And everybody at a concert today, at a Google concert, lives for what I call the high and holy moment. And the high and holy moment, and that's why you want to be as close to the mosh pit as you possibly can. And the high and holy moment occurs when you turn, the mic goes, am I not right? This is what everybody goes to a concert today for. Not to listen to somebody sing, but to be there when they turn the mic over to you so that it's your song now. The best paid, quote, performers in the future will be who's the best mic stand. This is the future. This is the future. Yeah.
What we're seeing now is, what do you want to, everybody's an expert now.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
But how do we vet that? I mean, at least when we were very logical, we were trained to be very logical. First of all, how do we break that logic and that linear thinking? And second of all, how do we deal with what really is true?
Yeah, well, see, this is the real challenge here. But see, our Googles don't have a problem with this. It's the Gutenbergers have a problem with this. I'll tell you what I mean. Our Googlies know that the blessing of the internet is that what? It contains everything. What's the curse of the internet? Yeah, it contains everything. Now, let's do this. Let me do it. So they see, for us, the fact that we're as Gutenberg people, the fact that it appears in print has authority for us. So the fact that it appears in print means that it's got to be true, because it's been vetted. Now, if it's been self-published, that also says something. But if it comes from a reputable publisher, it's been refereed, it's been vetted. When you go to Apprise, APPRISE, I think it's called Apprise Ministries. Our kids, but they need help here. But they know that you can't trust what's on the internet. When we read something on the internet, we say, well, it's on the internet, therefore it's got to be true. They have total skepticism about whether it's true or not. Are you there at a prize ministry? Yeah, APPR. No. It's I've got to figure, and this is where we can help them, see. This is the first generation in history that do not need authority figures to access information. Now, this is huge. Up until the Google world, every generation has needed authority figures, the big jug, little mug thing. You got to come to me to get the information, and I'm the portal to the information. We still have an educational system, a church system, that is based on precisely that. This is not, they don't need us. to access information. Where they need us for is how do I not access, but process it. Mentor me in it. Coach me in it. Help me to know what to do with it. I'm drowning in all this information. It's an avalanche of information. Help me process it. And secondly, to assess. Help me to assess what is good and what is bad information. And we can help them do that. Now, the problem is that we think that because it's on the web, did you find it yet? Or if you do, maybe just do Google Leonard Sweet Apprise, APP, or Appraise, APPRAISE, or maybe it's Appraise. Do you see anything? Anything come up?
Buying your books.
No, okay. Do this Leonard Sweet Chapel. Apprise, maybe it's Apprising Ministries. APPRISING. Apprising. No, this is. I don't want image search. This is. Are you doing image search or word search? We're both. Okay. Anyway, I just wanted to show you something that got posted earlier this week. That somebody totally, I mean literally, totally made up, fabricated a chapel service that I supposedly spoke at, and quoted me, and told about what happened. And the only thing they got right is I have used this text before. It's one of my favorite texts. So they got a text right, but nothing in it. I mean, they had people at my feet, you know, kissing my shoes. And trust me, you do not want to kiss these. These are shoes are 10 years old, and it would kill you to kiss these things. And my wife is starting to throw them away when I'm not looking. But they're my shoes. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing was totally fabricated. Now, my kids, they just, in fact, that's kind of fun for them, the fact that you got people out there making things up about you. But a Gutenberg person reads this and goes, oh, that really happened. Okay? So the Googlies are going, oh, this is fun. In fact, Rob Bell has anybody know that name? He has created a site that just says nasty things about him, and he's generating the site. Because he's just having fun. You know, so he's got a kind of a We Hate Rob Bell site, you know. And trust me, he does not need to generate his own We Hate Rob Bell site. But he's just having fun. I mean, he's got a Google mindset. He's going, okay, let's have a little fun. You know, at least they're talking about you. We'll get more hits, you know. And so what nasty thing can we say about me today, you know, and just making up stuff. And the people who get a Google world the best, let me give you their names. Converse. American Eagle. Barack Obama. You want the names of the three people out there that understand this Google mindset the best. It's these three. Let me talk to you about this this Jill Bolte Taylor. I just wanted you to see this site. I'm not going to tell you why I want you to see it, but just let's go and first of all, this Googlies are not going to buy anything that's not green and environmentally screened. I mean, they are as green as you can get. And if you do not have green credentials and have been able to prove your green credentials, forget it. That's one thing. Second, they are not into flash, flare, bling. Now, that's more Gen X. That's much more, but we're talking now about. So, but they want color. They want to customize it. They want to make it their own. And anything that allows them to do that. American Eagle, for example, you go into any American Eagle store, they give you a sticker. A sticker you put on your cell phone. Because they know every kid has a cell phone and would like to kind of decorate their cell phones. They have these wonderful, cute little stickers that can go on your cell phone. Let's go back to Jill Bolte Taylor. And let's just listen. I'm not going to have you listen to the whole thing, but just listen to a few minutes of it. Okay? And I'll tell you when to quit, Don. All right? And then you all watch this and then say, as you're watching it, why does Len want us to watch this? And if you go back to the beginning, that would be great.
Right where she starts talking.
Okay. Do the intro, so you can get a feel for the intro. And crank it up so we can hear it.
The brain, because I have a brother who has been diagnosed with a brain disorder, schizophrenia. And as a sister, and later as a scientist, I wanted to understand, why is it that I can take my dreams, I can connect them to my reality, and I can make my dreams come true? What is it about my brother's brain and his schizophrenia that he cannot connect his dreams to a common and shared reality, so they instead become delusion? So I dedicated my career to research into the severe mental illnesses, and I moved from my home state of Indiana to Boston, where I was working in the lab of Dr. Francine Bennis in the Harvard Department of Psychiatry. And in the lab, we were asking the question, what are the biological differences between the brains of individuals who would be diagnosed as normal control as compared with the brains of individuals diagnosed with schizophrenia, schizoaffective, or bipolar disorder? So we were essentially mapping the microcircuitry of the brain, which cells are communicating with which cells, with which chemicals, and then in what quantities of those chemicals. So there was a lot of meaning in my life because I was performing this type of research during the day. But then in the evenings and on the weekends, I traveled as an advocate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. But on the morning of December 10, 1996, I woke up to discover that I had a brain disorder of my own. A blood vessel exploded in the left half of my brain. And in the course of 4 hours, I watched my brain completely deteriorate in its ability to process all information. On the morning of the hemorrhage, I could not walk, talk, read, write, or recall any of my life. I essentially became an infant in a woman's body. If you've ever seen a human brain, it's obvious that the two hemispheres are completely separate from one another. And I have brought for you a real human brain. Thank you. So this is a real human brain. This is the front of the brain, the back of the brain with the spinal cord hanging down. And this is how it would be positioned inside of my head. And when you look at the brain, it's obvious that the two cerebral cortices are completely separate from one another. For those of you who understand computers, our right hemisphere functions like a parallel processor, while our left hemisphere functions like a serial processor. The two hemispheres do communicate with one another through the corpus callosum, which is made up of some 300 million axonal fibers. But other than that, the two hemispheres are completely separate. Because they process information differently, each of our hemispheres think about different things, they care about different things, and dare I say, they have very different personalities. Excuse me. Thank you. It's been a joy.
All right, let's just stop right there. Maybe we'll
our
come back
right
at
human
it.
Hemisphere.
But, okay, why did I want you to see that?
This present.
Anybody?
Right brain, left brain.
Understanding your audience. Okay, experiential.
Is that a cool brain?
Is that a cool? Now, you've heard left brain, right brain language before. Have you ever seen how separate the brains actually are? Okay. I've heard this left brain, right brain. I kind of checked out, frankly. Until I saw you and I have almost, there are two brains. We don't have one brain. It's two brains. Now, they're connected by these, you know, corpus callosum, all these little fibers here. But basically, and it's exactly right. your left brain is a serial processor, meaning it processes things as you would a book. Serially, consecutively, sequentially. The right brain, which is a whole different brain that's living up there, is a, what you call it? Parallel processor. And it processes things simultaneously as you would, as linear as the left brain is, that nonlinear is the right brain. Loop, the loop, the loop, just as you link from one sight, image, page, whatever you call it, to another. Now, that's one reason, because until I saw that brain. Right? Now, we're going to skip it because it's only 18 minutes, but just her major thesis here, and by the way, she had this little video that was so successful, it's the number one TED video, that she wrote a book called The Stroke of Insight. You look at the New York Times bestseller list, it's on the bestseller list. Called A Stroke of Insight. The thesis of her rest of her talk, and she didn't develop this as much as she might have, is that we've got to learn in the world, this is her phrase, to step to the right. Our churches are so what? Left brain. My whole education was so left brain. My whole way of living and moving is so left brain. And the part of the challenge is if we're going to communicate in a Google world, we've got to learn to be much more right brained. We've got to step to the right. In fact, I don't know, all of you have conferences called Boards of Ordained Ministries that are a part of them. When I preached at the North Carolina Annual Conference this year, I really raised the stir because I said, I know we got some Board of Ordained Ministry people here, and because everybody's proud to be on the Board of Ordained Ministry. Everybody started raising their hands and said, don't put up your hands. I don't want to see your hands. You all ought to be brought up on charges. Every one of you. Because you know that game, whack-a-mole? You know that whack-a-mole game? Any evidence of right-brained activity, this is what you've been doing for the past 20 years. Whack! Oh, here's a prospective candidate with some right brain activity. Whack! They'll never invite me back, but this is what the church has done to right brained people, to right brain functioning. We played whack-a-mole. And it's time now. Now, God gave us two brains for a reason. You with me? You don't want a right brain treasurer. Oh, I'm creative and imaginative. And, you want a whack-a-mole, the right brain, in any treasure. But we have not known what to do with... That's a big whack-a-mole. Yeah, that's the board. Yeah. That's a great caption, the Board of Ordained Ministry at Work. Yeah. You and I got to work together more. This is too much fun. Yeah, I love it. Pardon? Well, yes and no. But because, see, how the left brain communicates is through words. How the right brain communicates is through images. And that's what we're going to talk about this afternoon. How you connect with a Google world is not through, it's not the power of words. It's the power of images. And you all are in the image business. This is your major currency. It is not verbal communication with words. It is image communication. So that's one of the reasons. The other, just also notice that the video comes first and the book, you know. I mean, just this is, this became a viral thing. Just was so powerful, the people that were there. And that's another reason why you pay the $500. So I mean, $5,000. So you can say, I was there when she gave this. Hey, I was there when that happened. And when she picked up that brain, we about collapsed. You know, how did she get it there? And that kind of stuff. Yeah. How am I doing on time, David? Okay. So the release of imagination, creativity. I mean, for me, it is an absolute embarrassment that nobody's supposed to know God better than us. In the church, we're supposed to be the closest to God. What is God? God is the creator. So what does the creator do? Create. So if we're really close to God, then we're at the most creative place in the culture to be. The church. We're at the most imaginative and innovative place to be. The church. And what has happened to us? What has happened to us? We've become treasurers. Yeah, in our thinking, exactly. It's exactly right. And look what we've measured. You know, I call it the ABC church, attendance, buildings, and cash. Just what a treasurer would measure. Not what a right-brained person would measure. Comments, questions? Yeah.
There's a seeming contradiction almost in the way I've heard postmoderns described. One is, this is a whole generation or a culture for whom MySpace and Facebook is the natural form of, where they spend an awful lot of time. And yet at the same time, we talk about the key thing to them being relationship. Well, you know, the amount of time spent on a computer not with people seems to be contradictory to the desire for contact and relationship.
Okay, that's a great... that's a great insight. But let me... Remember what I said about the well curve. All right? In a well curve world, opposite things happen at the same time and they are not contradictory. All right? As anti-social as print is... The nature of this technology, this Google world, it's all about connection. And it connects you, and it wants to connect you. The problem is, it tickles and stimulates what it can't fulfill. All right? So it promises connection, but it can't fulfill it. It leaves you, actually, when you go off of line, when you're online, this is a virtual, vicarious, secondary, derivative world, and people are having relationships, they're having connections. Let's not diminish that, and that's one of the problems that we get into is Gutenberg people, that's not real connection, that's not real community. My 17-year-old son says, Dad, you tell me where the real community is. Saturday night, when I'm online with all my friends in chat rooms, and we're talking about all sorts of stuff, or next morning, Sunday, in a pew, sitting with a person next to me, you tell me where the real connection is. So let's not denigrate and diminish the new kinds of connection and relationships that are taking place online. But here's what it is. It stimulates. It tickles. So when you're offline, these googlies are absolutely ravenous for what? For relationship. That's the hunger. That's why the Midas touch in a Google world is a relationship touch. Everything they touch, they want to turn into a relationship because that's what their hunger is for. So you've got this huge, I just say the more Facebook, the more FaceTime, face-to-face, in-your-face time. So let me just put this in a more educational format. I spend my life in university, you know, seminary settings. So I'm pioneering, but taking a lot of grief for it, online learning. Now, for me, the University of Phoenix is the evil empire. Okay? Again, that's like PowerPoint. Okay, I don't do PowerPoint. I don't do University of Phoenix. What I do is I post, and I have doctoral students all over the world. I do some doctoral students, some masters, but by and large. So they're most continents, I limit it to 20 in a course. And I post either a lecture or an assignment. And during the week, they bounce off of one another in chat rooms and on posts online and talk to one another about that assignment and about that that posting. You can use Blackboard as one resource or whatever. Those 20 students will generate in the course of a week anywhere between a couple hundred to 1,000 different postings, which tells you immediately where's the major learning taking place. Peer-to-peer. Did you hear what I said? Now, you can contrast this to a traditional classroom course where you show up for 13 weeks, sit in a chair for a couple hours a week, and watch a professor encase themselves in chalk. Okay? Contrast that. That's our model. It's the lecture drill test method, good Gutenberg model. And we think that's the authoritative model. And it's got to be residential. Because we got to form a residential community. All right. So here I got students all over the world that are bouncing back and forth one another. Now, they're expecting me, by the way, every week to do what?
Read
all that. Yeah. So every day I go on and I just shudder because how many posts are there? Now, some of these posts are a couple of sentences, sometimes a couple of words, but sometimes they're a couple of pages. So you're talking about a massive amount of work here. Then once a week, I gather with them in a Web 3.0 platform called Second Life. Second Life is a virtual, three-dimensional. Have you ever been in Second Life? By the way, Reuters, you ever heard of Reuters, has two full-time reporters in Second Life. Just tracking what's going on in that new world that's forming. Now, I do not think Second Life will be the killer app. That's not it. Second Life, L-I-F-E. Yeah. What is that? Second Live. I like that. I do think though that you know there's Google Earth now, and Google Earth is doing something new, Google Planet, that I think maybe this. When Second Life merges with that, I think that may be the killer app. But for now, just S-E-C-O-N-D-L-I-F-E, Second Life. And so they are there. They each have an avatar, and they talk. You listen to each other talk. And so we're talking together in this avatar. I've created this island called Magmel Island. It's a new learning space. It's very Abbey-esque. It's like an Abbey, an online Abbey. And that's it. And it's amazing how their alter egos come out online as the avatars they choose to be. You get to shape your own avatar, whatever head you want, whatever body shape you want. Well, he'd have to download the whole the whole software and all that stuff. But then we meet for an hour and a half. In Second Life, every week, where I go, okay, you spent a lot of time talking about this. Why in the world did you do that? I didn't understand that. Why didn't you talk about this? And I thought your insights here were really good. So even in Second Life, though, they're talking to one another and they're talking to me at the same time, and I'm posting. So you got many things going on at once. And sometimes you're even walking. So you can meet underwater in Second Life. You can go on boat rides together in Second Life while you're having seminars, and you can fly, everybody flying, talking to one another. Then once a semester, they meet with me face-to-face for 2 days. We start early in the morning, 7 with breakfast, get done at 10, 11 at night. It's hard to get them to bed. For 2 days. And those 2 days, by the way, they have more face time with me than in a traditional semester course. Now, this is one of the reasons why we aren't going en masse to this new Google model is that it's a lot more work for a professor. It's a lot easier just to show up a couple times a week and lecture for a couple hours than to have to monitor 500 to 1,000 postings a week, have to be there for an hour and a half a week in Second Life and be prepared for what, how you're going to lead them, and then once a semester every 2 days. But hear me, I've never taught a course like this at the end of which the students haven't said, we got to have a reunion. Have you ever had a traditional classroom course at the end of which they said, we got to have a reunion? This has been so relationally rich, I'm not sure I can live without you all. See? This is a very new model, but it's both and. The more you do this stuff, the more you got to provide. I say the more academy, the more Abbey. In the future, this will be very Abbey-esque, because people will come together for shorter periods of time, not semester-based, but shorter periods of time for living together, worshiping together, praying together, loving together, eating together for 2 to 3 days and no more than 2 weeks. But you hold both extremes together at the same time. Yeah, then we'll close. Yeah, well, it's a new understanding of content. See, I think it's better to say, more accurate to say maybe, there's a new kind of content, all right? And I am fully prepared in the future that people will not buy my books or buy any products from LendSuite. Or if they do, they only pay pennies.
Or they can pay $5,000.
For a relationship with me. No, see, and that's exactly it. They will.
Let's put it this way. There's a big rock band that decided to give away their
CD
earlier this year.
Okay.
People paid, they gave the option to say, you can pay what you want for it. People paid between nothing to, you know, who knows what they pay for, the opportunity to have their content at a particular point in time and be the first one to have it. So, kind of like a exclusivity versus
something
that anybody can have.
But people, I'm assuming the band you're talking about is radio.
Yeah.
And what people pay hundreds of dollars for their tickets.
Bingo. That's what Grateful Dead did, the same thing. Yeah, exactly.
So just like having the music on their iPod, that doesn't mean that much to them.
Right.
Burn it anyway.
Right. Bingo. Exactly. And to be able to tell those stories. See, that's the real content now, is the stories that come out of the relationships. This culture is hungry for stories and narratives. You all are story catchers and rainbow trappers. That's what I call them. Story catchers. You go out and you catch a story you can. Rainbow, this is hope images. Let me tell you, we need to trap stories of hope, especially in this culture. I mean, Good Morning America has a hope index. Every morning, they check where you are in the hope index. And the visitors, they say, where would you place yourself on the hope index? What would the hope index be like for the church? I'm going, why are they doing that? Why aren't we doing that? This is our stuff. Hey, we're so, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, mash it. Exactly. Mash up. Yeah. Exactly. The more interaction, the more participation, the better. Let's end right here with this one. This is how social networks are even creating art. Would you go to Zoom Quilt? Quilt.org, I think. How many of you are familiar with this? Okay. Zoom Quilt. This is Ken Social Networks. Ken crowdsourcing is what it's called as well. Create, that's it. Just going through the flash. There is no beginning. A collaborative art project. It won't take long. And you just, you steer it with your, you got to click there to start. And just click. Just, you got to lead your way with your mouse. Just keep going. Just keep, just push it down all the way. And just, you just keep going. And you can slow down and see things you haven't seen before that you didn't know were there. But collaborative art projects, even, is this whole idea of interaction and participation. And actually, you can, there's one little trap door that says salvation. There's one little, that talk about that narrow way. At any rate, there's Zoom quilt. All right, we're gonna talk some more in depth this afternoon about what does it mean to connect with this culture. But just the introduction to Gutenberg and Google. Thank you.